countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
It may sound frightening, but the scientific evidence is that if we have not taken dramatic action within the next decade, we could face irreversible damage to the natural world and the collapse of our societies.
We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses and we are running out of time.
We're running out of time, but there is still hope.
We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not.
I believe that if we better understand the threat we face, the more likely it is that we can avoid such a catastrophic future.
The real power belongs to the people.
Ireland has become only the second country in the world to declare a climate emergency.
The news on Thursday night that Ireland had declared a climate and biodiversity emergency came days just after a devastating UN report predicting that 1 million species are in danger of extinction. Our ecosystems are shrinking, deteriorating, or vanishing due to human activity, including deep sea trawling, urbanisation, deforestation, and the intensification of farming and food production.
If we cannot halt climate change or halt the loss of biodiversity, we will threaten food security, we will threaten water security, we will threaten human health. And therefore, I think governments are now recognising if they don't start to deal with climate change and biodiversity, they can't meet their other elements of human well-being that are absolutely fundamental.
Intensive agriculture and food production accounts for about one-third of all global greenhouse gas emissions. In Ireland, that percentage is over 30%, because agriculture and in particular livestock production is disproportionately more important to Ireland than the global average.
Ladies and gentlemen, those 55,000 jobs are dependent on suckler farmers across the country getting up at night.
At around the same time as Ireland was declaring a climate change emergency, over 1,200 farmers were gathering in Galway for Farmers Journal Beef Summit. These farmers are fed up getting paid low prices for their cattle.
If we don't get a decent price for our animals in the next few years, we'll be like the concrete in rural Ireland. We'll be destined to history.
Leaders of the world, you must lead the continuation of our civilizations, and the natural world upon which we depend is in your hands.
The way we produce food and farm the land is changing in response to tackling climate change and protecting ecosystems. But how do we continue to produce food in an environmentally sustainable way, while also ensuring the financial well-being of farm families such as those that gathered in Ballinasloe last Thursday? That's the question we're going to discuss in this special Countrywide this morning. Later we'll have a panel to tease out the challenges and opportunities facing farming in tackling climate chaos and species extinction. But first, there are around 120,000 farmers in Ireland producing billions of euro worth of food for home consumption and export every year. This is Ireland's largest indigenous industry, and it's at the heart of life in rural Ireland. But big challenges lie ahead. If Ireland is to meet its climate change obligations, the way we farm the land will change. It's happening already. Johnny Green is a tillage and suckler farmer from County Kildare. He's part of an organisation called Base Ireland, which is committed to conservation farming.
We've been on a programme here for the last 10 years, along with another quite a few farmers now. There's more people getting involved, trying to do that, trying to reduce our impact on the environment whilst also trying to make a profit. Our main focus here would be on soil health, with the simple thought being that if the soil is healthy and is a living, working ecosystem, it will grow a healthy crop. And no different than a human, if you're healthy, you are in a much better position to fight sickness, insect attack, or the like. It's been quite a long lead into this. We started using more animal animal manures rather than fertilisers at the start. We used some chicken manure, we used some pig slurry, we used some, and we have cattle on the farm, we used some dung. And that has allowed us to reduce the chemical fertiliser input. It is also a more balanced fertiliser, organic manures, because it have more trace elements, more phosphates, potassiums, magnesiums, borons, the likes, rather than just an intense nitrogen fertiliser approach. Another thing we did is we stopped cultivating the ground, so we went minimum tillage, then strip tillage, and now we're in no tillage. So what that is allowing to do, by not aerating the soil, we're losing less carbon from the soil, we're less at risk from nitrogen leaching, phosphate runoff, all these things. So a lot of the stuff that under traditional systems might be lost from the land, we're holding on to it a little bit better here, which is allowing us to build the fertility of the soil, which in turn is allowing us to keep our yield. So we have reduced our inputs gradually, and I say gradually, I think that's very important. You can't just give up and go cold turkey. You have to do this gradually. When reducing the use of insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, especially with our climate being quite moist, a little bit of pragmatism is required. So our plan would be to greatly reduce the amount of inputs and chemicals and fertiliser we use whilst holding yield. I think as farmers, all we can do is do our best. Farm in an environmentally friendly way that satisfies the environment, farm in a way that makes a little bit of profit for ourselves and provides the country with milk, beef to export, because we have to make a bit of money, and we're going to have to up our game, and we're going to have to make sure there's a little bit in it for everybody, both for us, for the consumer and for the environment.
That's Johnny Green there from County Kildare, and his gorgeous farm there, farming very much with conservation, biodiversity, soil health and the environment to the forefront. Well, joining me here in studio now are two journalists who've written about the role consumers and farmers must play collectively in helping Ireland meet its climate change obligations. Familiar voices to us, Dara McCullough and Suzanne Campbell. Good morning, you're both very welcome.
Good morning.
Dara, can the family farm model of farming as we know it in this country, can it continue while reducing its carbon footprint?
Sure. I mean, the key thing here is farmers are a part of the problem, but because they're part of the problem, they're part of the solution. In fact, probably the key part to the solution. So, and you know, farmers are going around the country at the moment feeling like environmental terrorists, because every time they turn on the tractor, put on a cluster, spread a bit of fertilizer, they know in the back of the head, this, am I wrecking the planet now? I'm only doing my job, but what impact is this having? So they're kind of unsure where to turn, and they're not being given a lot of guidance on this. I mean, there is gradually more and more information coming at them, but they do feel confused. They don't know whether to stick or twist. I mean, this is their livelihoods. On one hand, you know, the environmentalists are telling them that basically they should stop what they're doing. And get out of livestock farming. But they have a living to make, they have families to support, and they actually care about the environment.
And they're playing within rules set down within the EU, and they're also following advice that's been given by government agencies and by the government, especially when it comes to dairying. Remember the huge excitement at government level when milk quotas disappeared, and we talked about becoming the fastest growing dairy sector in the country, and any farmer that was not going to increase was going to be left behind. Suzanne, with that in mind, farmers being in the firing line, when you look at the contribution agriculture makes to emissions, your immediate reaction, as Dara says, is that they must change their ways. But isn't it really the case that we as consumers, we need to change our ways too, if not first?
Absolutely. I mean, do we as consumers feel like environmental terrorists when we go in and buy cheap food off the shelf and cheap milk? Do we feel like an environmental terrorist when we go to Lisbon for the weekend and think
or
endlessly...
Or when we buy our cheap wine?
Well, yeah, buy everything. Just endlessly consume stuff that we don't need and then bin it. You know, our whole habits are part of this problem. The consumer is the end user of this product. But, I mean, if you look at the oil industry, does the person putting the petrol in their tank pay the carbon tax, or the producer in the Middle East? What we're looking at is the farming model should pay the price and not the consumer. And where that has come from is that in the EU after the war, we decided on a cheap food model. We wanted no fluctuations in the price of food. We wanted people to benefit from nourishing regular supply of food. But what that's meant is we subsidised farmers to produce food on volume, en masse. Supermarkets delivered it at a low price. And with the intense competition we have now, particularly in Ireland among supermarkets, we buy very cheap food and the environmental cost is borne elsewhere. So who pays that environmental cost is key.
And this is something you put to consumers this week.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at, are we so driven by price as consumers that we won't change our habits in line with climate change and with changes that we need to make as individuals coming down the tracks? I went down to Waterford during the week to talk to a supermarket owner who does something very different, who supplies an awful lot of local food, who puts local producers on the shelf, and who's trying to get out of that cheap food model. It's a family business going for 50 years, but Colin Jeffson is his name, and it's Ard Kean Grocery. But first of all, I went round the car park of Ard Kean, and where there's also a Lidl and an Aldi next door, and I asked people, do they ever think of climate change or buying local food when they're doing their shopping?
First of all, I try and get Irish grown stuff because they are miles on, vegetables and fruit being brought in.
Do you think, are people going to make that jump to buy more local food, or is it just whatever is cheapest?
I would think that the majority of people will go for what's cheapest.
One thing we're going to have to deal with really now and into the near future is climate change and sustainability. Is that a big jump for consumers to make when they're filling their basket? Like, is this product more sustainable? Is it local? Or how do you think people will react to that?
You know, you can tell people, but they'll do what they want in the end. Until the flood is at your own door, people will not give up, because to them, that's something out there. I don't think they realise just how close we are to the edge.
Would people shop more for local or Irish food, or is price the most important thing?
Price, I think. Lidl and Aldi are places you come for cheaper shopping. It's not sustainability or anything like that. We'd all like the best of stuff, but you can't afford it.
With climate change coming down the tracks, do you think people ever think about that when they lift something and maybe go, oh, this is imported, or this is more air miles, or I should buy local? Is that even a consideration, or is that way too far down the tracks?
For me, it's probably further down the tracks. It doesn't come to mind immediately. Definitely what does come to mind, I think, is recycling, packaging, things like that. So, and I think that's a mindset change over the last 10, 15 years. So it may be just behind the curve in terms of the CO2 emissions, but certainly packaging and recycling would definitely be front of mind for me anyway in shopping.
So can we change our habits? There's an awful lot of people that will say, oh, come on, Suzanne, you know, you can't make money selling local food in Ireland unless you're at a very high-priced, niche, well-heeled farmer's market. But Colin Jeffson does make it work at his store, which is as big as Aldi, by the way. It's not a little small shop. And he took me around the shop and showed me some of his local suppliers.
This is an old favourite of ours, Crinocton Apple Juice, County Waterford in Capoquin. Let's go over to the chilled area. This is very local, Mooncoin beetroot, just outside Waterford in County Kilkenny. You know, it's just nice to have on a salad or something.
And you're devoting, I mean, if I look at these two tables, you're devoting quite a big shelf space and merchandising to local produce.
We do, yeah. We tend to feature local products, but we do have all the main brands, as you point out, so you can do all your shopping here. And we buy well for those brands, and we have them at competitive prices.
Mm-hmm. Are we a kind of a two-sided coin in terms of shopping, that we'll talk about local being important and you can make it work in your model, but the vast majority of people go in and look for value and forget about sustainability, forget about local, forget about its climate impact. They just want the cheapest one on the shelf or the cheapest bag of veg.
You're right. You know, within the general population, there are people who don't really care about where the product came from or how it got to the supermarket shelf. They buy it based on price. But there's a whole raft, maybe an increasing niche there. It's maybe still in a minority of people, but I do think that there are many people and a growing number of people who are interested, for whom provenance is important, and who will make choices based on their priorities. Their priorities include buying local, good quality food because they feel it's better for them, better for their communities, better for their families, better for the planet.
Colin Jeffson there, shopkeeper in the southeast. Now, Dara, back to farmers, and you've been to Cork.
Yeah. Donal Sheehan, your quintessential dairy, commercial dairy farmer, 75 cows, 120 acres, half a mile outside the village of Castle Lyons in northeast Cork. He is a top farmer, but he's also a top environmentalist, which gives great hope to the likes of me in terms of inspiring me that I can farm and still look after the environment. I went down to his farm during the week.
This is the problem we have, Dara, that for years and years we were told that, you know, you need to keep your farms neat and tidy, but it's that kind of a sterilisation that has got us to all the problems that we have with losing biodiversity.
But even in practical terms, are you not mortified then when all the neighbours are driving by and going, look at that, and that used to be such a good farm?
And I'm sure they are saying that, but I suppose it's we have to bring those people with us as well. Yeah. That's the journey we're all on.
You're very proud of your nettles as well.
I am, yeah. Nettles they're the food plant for five different butterflies.
And you know, I spent many a summer being sent out to the field to top nettles because they're an awful eyesore. That's supposed to be a high production field producing grass for
the
cows.
A small bunch of nettles are 2 metres by 2 metres, something as small as that. You'll get hundreds of caterpillars and just something that small, and just leave that bunch there. And you know, we talk about growing wildflowers, but actually the wildflowers that we're putting in will never be probably as beneficial as for instance the thistles. Creeping thistles, spear thistles are an absolutely fantastic plant for pollinators and for honey.
But if every farmer in the country just lets the thistles go to seed and the nettles go to seed in their fields, do you not get seed blown around? This is the commercial farmer out me here.
This is the way we have to become more tolerant, and it's not about letting your farm go wild. You have to make an income, but it's just having little bits here and there, whether it is for pollinators, whether it is for birds, whether it is for invertebrates like the dragonflies or amphibians like frogs or whatever. It's just having little pockets of an oasis on every farm, so that the way I explain it always is that if you're going up to Dublin from Cork, you have to, you know, you might stop in Kerr for a cup of tea, you might stop in Portlaoise for a lunch, and wildlife is the same. They need all these pit stops all over the place.
And one of the other key pit stops you've created here on the farm is a pond. Dig it out yourself?
Yeah, it was filled in for years and years.
There was a pond here years ago,
before my time, and we just dug it out and
like the good high production dairy farmer that I am.
Absolutely.
You got rid of the wet patch, so that you could grow more grass. But now you put it back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how long is this established here, Don?
This is only here for 2 years, and there was frog spawn there this year. Last year we had dragonflies, four different species of dragonflies.
And we're just walking through a sward here. I think this must be a bit of a species mix. Is it these plantains I'm looking at?
Yeah.
So, or are they just weeds?
Plantains, Dara. Plantains. Yeah, yeah. So this is the multi-species mix. So,
okay. But presumably all these other species of grass aren't as productive as perennial ryegrass. I mean, the reason that dairy farmers grow so much perennial ryegrass is because it is the top producer. It is the Ferrari of grasses, isn't it?
It's a species that's dependent on nutrients. So in this instance, you have the clovers that are drawing down the nitrogen for you, so you can cut back on your nitrogen. And it's not just a multi-species ward, it's a multi-purpose ward. So you can see that when you get down here, it's a really thick sward, and this is the kind of sward where you have loads of invertebrates if you're talking about biodiversity, because they have cover.
Beetles and sawflies
and things like that. So you get more biodiversity because it's such a closed in a matted sward. It's a tussocky mix. It's what we call a tussocky mix.
When I went to ag college, I think they were telling us that these were weed grasses.
They were, and again,
the lower productivity, the cocksfoot, the timothy, all that kind of stuff.
I think Tagisk have does research now to say that they are able to compete with the ryegrass swards. There's chicory in this, and chicory is very drought tolerant.
But how did it do last summer for you?
Fantastic. The chicory was the only thing that was
really
growing, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Have you noticed new species appearing on your farm?
We had a cuckoo last year, the first time, I'd say, since I was, I'd say, 5 years old. I'd say the cuckoos that disappeared and they never came back. So we had a female cuckoo here last year, which was fantastic. And they were actually foraging on the caterpillars in the nettle patch. So that worked. But there's other things that'll be
You'll
less
going out planting
significant.
Nettles next, will you?
Well, just having a bunch here and there will do no harm.
Yeah, good on you.
Well, there's a happy farmer, Donald Sheehan, talking to Dara. Donald is, in fact, a farming and farming for nature ambassador. And if you know somebody who'd be good in that role, the closing date for entries is tomorrow. Details on farmingfornature.ie. Suzanne Campbell and Dara McCullough, thank you both. We'll be hearing from both of you throughout the summer on this whole issue as well, no doubt. Morning, we're focusing on farming and the environment. Can a healthy environment and functioning ecosystem coexist alongside a healthy and functioning farming sector? Can farmers continue to produce food, make a living for themselves and protect the environment all at the same time? And what needs to change to ensure this? Well, joining me now in studio, Dr. Cara Gustenberg, environmental scientist and recently appointed to the Council of State. Mairead Lavery, farmer and journalist with the Farmers Journal, is in our Limerick studio. Patrick Wall, Professor of Human Health in UCD, and Padraig Fogarty, campaign officer with the Irish Wildlife Trust, are also here with me. You're all very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Now, Cara, when we look all around us, you know, flying off in an airplane or driving out of the cities, we see lovely green fields owned and maintained by farmers. For the uninitiated, the people that are not really following climate change closely, it seems to be counterintuitive to think that these workplaces could be contributing so much to climate change and habitat loss.
Yeah, well, everything we do contributes to climate change, really, because we are so locked into a fossil fuel-based economy. So, you know, we have to look at everything, transport, diets, everything. But particularly in Ireland, we're unique because we have a developing country's carbon footprint, even though we're a developed country, and only New Zealand rivals us in that sense. And that's because of our policy of quote-unquote sustainable intensification of dairy and beef. And so we've seen between 2012 and 2016 a 31% increase in milk production, and with that an 8% increase in greenhouse gas emissions in that time, because the more cows we have to the herd, the more methane we emit. And what we know from the climate science is that what we need to be doing is reducing emissions by 45% between now and 2030, which isn't that far away. So every sector needs to be reducing emissions radically if we want to stay below that 1.5 degree limit of global average temperature. Yeah.
And here we are talking about agriculture, and they're going to build another runway in Dublin Airport. So I have to be clear, it's not just agriculture.
Absolutely.
But it's magnified in this country, as we said, because it's our largest industry, as we said at the start. Just picking up on that point, Paddy Wall, like, Irish farming is driven by demand. Farmers are in the supply-demand business, and we export 80% of what we produce, and particularly when it comes to dairying, we export billions of euros of dairy products across the world. Now, if you look at the Foodwise 2025 initiative, which encourages farmers to ramp up production, if our politicians this week are serious about climate emergency, and if it's not just a pre-election gimmick, does that spell the end of this Foodwise 2025 project?
No. Like, the unique selling point of Ireland is that it's a green and pleasant land, which it is, you know. But so we want to grow production without destroying the environment. And that's possible. And so, we've increased the number of dairy cows since 2012 by 350,000. So if you have that large increase, twice the number of cows on a farm, that's twice the amount of slurry to be dealt with, etc. So,
Is there a problem in the dairy industry?
There's a problem in a subset of the dairy industry, and we are inclined to generalise from subset to all farmers, which isn't correct. Like, we had John and Donald on there talking about their projects. AgriAware had 3 open days last Monday for farms and to attract urban people onto farms, and the farmers need to be complimented. They were spectacular. And there's many farmers like them, but there's a subset of farmers that have grown beyond their capability. And so we don't want it. It's 40 shades of green, not 40 shades of brown, you know? So, we can grow our production and look after the environment.
But can we have a million dairy cows in this country and have a reduction in the carbon footprint of dairying?
But possibly we can increase production without actually increasing the cow numbers. Like, they talk in that harvest, our Foodwise 2025, about a smart farm.
Does that impinge on animal welfare?
No. I mean, the idea that the average milk solids for a cow in Ireland is 380 kilos, but you could have more efficient cows, could produce 625 kilos, right. You know, and so therefore you don't need to increase your numbers. And in fact, it became a kind of a status symbol in Ireland. How many cows are you milking now?
Yeah.
Like, if you said I was milking 100 cows before quotas were lifted and I'm still making 100, you're nearly deemed a failure, which, you can efficiently manage a smaller herd.
Yeah.
And that's what was special about Ireland. And so, the idea that we can actually modify the diet of the cow and the genetics of the cow to produce less greenhouse gas. The consumers are concerned about greenhouse gases. The consumers are concerned about pollution, and the environmentalists are correct. So the farmers have, if they don't address consumers' concerns, they won't have any customers. And it's not only, and like the minor game is in Ireland, the senior game for food exports is abroad.
Right.
But this is a global issue. But the idea that cows can actually, you can modify, the cow has four stomachs. One of the stomachs is the rumen. It's like a fermentation vat. And if you change the microbial flora in the fermentation vat, you can change the amount of methane right. that's produced.
Okay.
And so we need to address those issues.
Right, and all of that is going to have to happen and happen very fast. Porter Fogarty, you've been very critical, and I've heard you in radio interviews of Irish farming's impact on the environment. But in demanding climate justice for us all, has any environmental campaigner thought out fully the impact on farmer incomes and farmer welfare? Like, it doesn't make any sense to tell livestock farmers, oh, we should all start growing crops. Like, 90% of the grain that's grown in this country is for animal feed.
I would disagree with Paddy. I think continued expansion in agriculture is a fantasy. We only have a certain amount of land. We've already gone way beyond the limits that nature can provide. We have to get back within those limits. And it is this idea of limits, I think, that people find so hard to get their head around. The issue of farmers' livelihoods is absolutely intertwined. I mean, these are not separate issues. We have to start seeing the collapse of nature and the collapse of climate as being totally intertwined with inequality and poverty in the farming sector. If we can get all those things right, there is, of course, a future for farming. I mean, we've no alternative but to produce food.
Future for dairy farming, beef farmers?
Well, I mean, we have to produce food. How that is done can't go on the way, you know, we can't put food just as part of global commodity markets because it's killing the planet. It's destroying our landscape and it is undermining farmers' own ability to continue producing food.
But the demand for beef and dairy globally is growing.
The planet is dying.
Yeah, but it is growing.
But sure, who cares if it's growing if the planet is collapsing?
But if we don't produce the milk and dairy here in this country, well, it's going to be coming from maybe from Brazil and less efficient countries. That's the point.
The problem with the efficiency argument is that nobody cares. The curlews and the birds that are going extinct don't care about our efficiency. The polluted waterways don't care. The atmosphere doesn't care.
The farmers that will go extinct? As we heard one of them say there in Ballinasloe the other evening, that they will be as extinct as the curlew if they don't get a better price for the produce.
And that's absolutely part of the problem. If we continue driving this idea that we got to keep going and keep trying to keep up with global demand, we're all going to go extinct. We're all in this together. This isn't about farmers versus consumers.
We all live in the same planet.
We all share this country and we all have to be part of the solution.
Yeah. Marie Lavery in Limerick, good morning to you. At a
good
macro
morning.
Level, I mean, the science, the statistics, it puts agriculture very much in the dock, as we know. But at ground level, you know, where you are among farmers and you're a farmer yourself, we know the farmers are quite, as individuals, they're resourceful, they're self-sufficient. You know, they don't drive to work like the rest of us. They have gardens like a lot of us don't in city areas. They don't fly away on holidays maybe as much as the rest of us, although that's probably a bit of a generalisation. But at individual level, the actual custodians of the land, these farmers, are they a bit miffed at hearing, you know, all the criticisms of what they do on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think miffed is an understatement here, Dara. I think they're very deflated about it. They feel they can do nothing right. And, you know, they haven't been alone. For the past 60 years, farmers have been told to feed Europe, feed the continent and do it cheaply. And that's exactly what they've done. And they haven't done it alone. I mean, they've worked on the best advice all the time, from whether it's the state agencies like Chagas, state marketing such as Bord Bia, the Department of Agriculture, the processors and the retailers. They squared up to the challenge and they met all their targets. And now they're being told everything they do is wrong. And it's really confusing and very, very, you know, depressing for farmers. Because over and over again, farmers have shown that they're willing and capable of transformative change. And in the environmental area, they have been doing an enormous amount of things. Like if you think back 20 years ago to the establishment...
But there seems to be a bit of a pushback, Marie. Like your colleague Thomas Thomas Hubert tweeted the other evening that there was a noticeable groan in the audience at Ballinasloe whenever the word climate change was mentioned.
Well, there is a big fear that no matter what we do in this country, it's not going to measure up, because, you know, you've got what's happening in Brazil, you've got what's happening in China. So what we, you know, our contribution, whatever it is, will never be deemed to be enough. And you know, that's not really where the thing is. You know, farmers need a plan. At the moment, there's so many diverse voices out there. This should be done, the other should be done, whatever. And what they really need is a blueprint. They need a plan. They need the best minds focused on this, and they need it funded. And they will deliver. I mean, you know, we've really gone big on soil testing in the country as a way of reducing the use of fertiliser. Waterways, most waterways are all fenced off from cattle now. And I mean, when I was growing up, it was standard practice to see cows and cattle, you know, drinking out of the local river. Hedgerows have been reinstated all over the country. Stone walls developed. Got panels on roofs to generate electricity and heat water. That eliminates the use of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Native woodland is being planted. You know, there's so much being done by individual farmers across the country, but you know, they really feel doing their best could still be lost as a drop in a bucket of what needs to be done across the world.
Right,
and that's their biggest concern at the moment. I'm doing a series in the Farmers Journal around the kitchen table, and I was actually out last night along the border of Limerick and Tipperary in the Golden Vale, and we were with a group of five farmers and looking ahead. You know, they're all going to be staying in business and looking ahead into the future. And the first thing that was on their agenda was environment.
Okay.
They realise that, you know, there has to be stuff done. But this willy-nilly approach and all these voices shouting about it, you know, is not good enough. We need the plan.
Okay, Cara, farmers need a plan.
Yeah, and I think farmers got bad advice. They got advice and support from our government to intensify. And many of us were saying for years that this is risky. When you're facing an uncertain climate, you need to diversify. And it's really interesting. If you want to know where the future of agriculture probably is going, read Chapter 8 of the Joint Oireachtas Climate Committee, mm-hmm. where they talk about the absolute need for diversification of farmers' income sources and product types. And we had that 40, 50 years ago, and we need to go back to that. And I think watch this space, because that report was endorsed by all of government. And by June, we're expecting to see a multi-stakeholder forum on how agriculture can diversify more.
Paddy?
Well, I think that dealing with the problem, and I'm not disagreeing with Pádraig. He said I was. He said we shouldn't expand. I say we should become more efficient. We don't need to expand. But basically, this is a society-wide issue, so we can't be just picking, figuring out farmers. But if you just look at the way the supermarket is laid out, meat and dairy, that's two little sections. That's awful dangerous. But, you know, look up the middle aisle of the supermarket. You buy a Swiss roll, 20% extra. You buy 20 bags of crisps, you get 6 extra. You buy a half a dozen bars of chocolate. You buy a can of Coke. It's a jumbo bottle of Coke. And Coke.
But they're individual decisions that we can make, whether we want to feed ourselves full of sugar or whatever like that.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily impacting on the environment, on the rest of
it. But the consumer, that's actually, everyone has a responsibility. And when you look at the supermarket, 15% of the supermarkets are devoted to selling alcohol, and people are worried about milk and your health.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Okay, Pádraig?
There are solutions available. There are things that are already working in Ireland. If you go to the Burren, you can see...
And we heard two farmers earlier,
yes, for example. Exactly. There are farmers out there with great ideas and are doing great things. We have to stop looking at the Burren like it is some kind of a heritage park. This is part of the future of farming. Chagas themselves identify that a third of our farmland is suitable for high nature value farming. We need to get on with that. We also need to be looking at the idea of not farming in some places. Not every square metre of Ireland is suitable for farm animals, and we need to start moving to alternatives where we can let nature come back.
But what are those
parts.
Alternatives? This is the question farmers will put to you. So if you're a dairy farmer that expanded, borrowed big from the bank to buy extra cattle, to buy extra land, to build milking parlours, what are you saying to those guys now?
Well, there's many different types of farmers in Ireland. There are many farmers that have different types of fields. What we want to do is to make sure that farmers have options, that they're given back some control over what they do on their land, and that there are these alternatives. I definitely feel that's
but if
possible.
But if the demand in the Far East, for example, is growing for Irish produce, for dairy products, as we know, Tara McCarthy said earlier this week that it's the demand for beef, I think, is going to double. You were saying the other day that the demand for dairy produce, Irish dairy produce, or maybe dairy produce all over, is growing in China. But what 300% in the next couple of years?
Yeah, true. But like the thing is that the unique
selling... So farmers turn their back on that for the betterment of the environment.
No, but the focus should be on quality rather than quantity. So what was the unique selling point of Ireland was it was green and pure, the water was clean, the air we had, by all the positives that we have. So why would you destroy all the positives in the hunt for the... You know, in the long term, we if we maintain our green... environment, we'll actually benefit.
Okay, so I'll bring you back in a second, Mairead. Pádraig and Cara, just respond.
The problem with this idea of the green image that we've been sold over the past 5 or 6 years is that it's a fantasy. Industrialization of our seas and our land has destroyed nature. And that is the problem. We've been selling this green image that in a way is a myth. It's not actually reality. But it could be a reality. We're not talking about protecting nature anymore. We're talking about restoring it.
But Cara, we do have to feed an increase population. It's not up to Ireland to feed the world, but we can do a lot. So if demand for food is increasing, whatever about this green image or not, are we not a little bit greener than maybe some of the other competitive countries looking for?
I would disagree with Patty's statement there about not turning our back. I mean, half of our dairy product now is going to the Chinese infant formula market, and you know, Origin Green is partially taxpayer funded, and we're pushing this unnecessary product on Chinese mothers. And I would say we should turn our back on that product. And instead, we've moved away from horticulture. It's our fourth largest farming sector here. We have almost no Chagask advisors in that sector. And we're now much more dependent on imports in horticulture because of that. So maybe we need to be looking more inward.
Okay, I'm going to start with you, Mairead, just very briefly on this. In pointing the finger at farmers, of course, there's four fingers pointing back, we'll say, at us. And the point earlier, should we be paying more for food, which would... I suppose free up an awful lot more of the cap money to incentivize the ag sector to do more for protecting the ecosystems and the environment. That we have a role to play.
Yeah, well, we've gone for a high volume, low margin type of farming. Retail sales situation, and you know, it has meant that farmers have had to specialize and have had to get bigger in what they're doing. In terms of like letting loose some of the cap payments for to deal with this. We can also look at, say, the EU 28 spending on military. Last year, it was 192 billion euro was military spending across the EU, which is hard to believe.
The cap is about 60 billion, is it?
Well, I'm not sure what the figure
it's
is, to be honest.
That, yeah.
But it's 192 for military spending. Now, if we want to keep Europe safe and environmentally right, I mean, why not target some of that spending to deal with what's going on? And... You know, I think one of the, you know, the issues from a farmer's point of view is, you know, they look at the marches against water charges, and, you know, the same people can be shouting about what farmers are doing.
Okay.
And also, just looking at the burn situation, I'm around long enough to remember that, you know, the farmers' practices on the burn were completely derided by official sources. And, you know, they were told to put their livestock in over the winter and build slatted units and all the rest of it.
Right.
And it was the farmers' campaign that brought the burn back, and they followed what they had been doing for thousands of years.
Pádraig, just on that, is this, you know, again about the four fingers pointing back at consumers, we're pointing a finger at agriculture. Is this a top-down approach or a bottom-up approach we need here?
It's an everybody approach. The United Nations have identified their sustainable development goals, and what that means is that we can't address climate change or the extinction of the natural world without also addressing poverty and inequality and, let's say, rural decline. They're all parts of the same problems. The solutions are out there if we collaborate and we work together. The reason the Burren works so well is because government and scientists and farmers collaborated and worked together to find the answers. That's what we need across the board.
All right, Cara?
Yeah, I would agree with Pádraig. I think we need a lot more of the kind of burn approach, and I'm hopeful with the Joint Oireachtas Committee's recommendation that we will start to see that for an all of Ireland approach that looks at diversification of income sources and allowing farmers to feed more into renewable energy and other elements instead of just intensification of beef and dairy.
Yeah, and Paddy, there is an awful lot of land in this country that would be suitable for bioenergy, for forestry and all of that, but we have this aversion to using land to grow energy that should be used for food. Probably goes back to the famine times, I don't know. But what about diversifying and diversification and encouraging diversification, particularly on livestock farms? Is that going to be a big solution?
I think so. And the consumption patterns of the public are changing, so therefore we need to respond to that. But I think, like, we have a problem globally of obesity.
And so, like, we need to, and we have it in Ireland, and so therefore we need to focus on, the public need to focus on quality rather than quantity. You are what you eat, and so watch what they're eating. And the farmers in Ireland need to focus on quality rather than quantity, and like get a premium price for a quality product. But just to correct, I didn't say that the, like, breast is best. There's no question about that, and that's the WHO recommended. But milk powders go for lots of other things than follow-on formulas and young adults and sports nutrition and my pet project, nutrition in the elderly. Right. So there's lots of homes for milk powder.
So milk powder is not just for
babies.
All right, okay. Look, I know there are people listening to us now. We're probably going to get texts and tweets. We didn't say this, we didn't do that. At least we've had the discussion this morning, and it's a discussion we need to continue having about this country's, how the role is, of farming and food production in this country needs to change as we try and deal with the climate emergency. But I want to thank you all for coming in, and we'll hear more from you, I'm sure, as time goes on. Paddy Wall, Cara Gustenberg, Padraig Fogarty and Mairead Lavery, thank you very much.